It's Tuesday, February 14th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about our experience at UberCon.
Let's do this.
So, today, in lieu of doing our normal bit of having news and all that sort of thing, we're just going to cover our experiences at UberCon.
Expect this to happen for many, many weeks to come as we go to many, many cons and thus devote entire shows to them.
Yes, and not all cons get a whole show, but UberCon, we had enough. One day of UberCon was enough to give us an entire show.
Mostly because we did some awesome things there.
Yep. So UberCon, for those of you who may not know, is a gaming convention primarily.
It happens, I think, 2 times a year?
Yep, twice a year, usually in the wintery time.
Mm-hmm.
It's in North Jersey near the Meadowlands, and it's about an hour and a half drive for us, so we just went for the day Saturday. We didn't want to get a hotel room, we didn't want to pre-reg or anything.
It was much cheaper that way. I mean, it was still $40 for a day, which is quite a bit considering some cons are $40 for all the 3 days.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
Well, gaming cons,
especially since we didn't pay for hotels or anything.
In general, gaming cons tend to be more expensive than any other type of con, just because they actually provide a lot more to you. There's not so much of that people milling around doing nothing. Everyone there wants to be doing something or they get pissed.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
You also got to buy a lot more equipment, a lot more stuff, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, like games. And there's a lot more insurance because games and things are broken and all kinds of crap.
Yep.
So, whatever.
So we drove down there. We registered, and registration was probably the most painless registration I've ever had of any con ever. We just walked in. I didn't have to do anything. I said my name. They said, oh, you've been here before. And they just took my money and gave me another badge.
Mm-hmm. The best part was I hadn't been there before, so I had to fill a little piece of paper. And then they took my money and gave me a badge. Actually, they almost forgot to take my money, but I reminded them.
Yeah.
But, apparently the guy who is a... I forgot his name.
He's the head of Stonekeep.
Yeah, Stonekeep, I think, Convention Registration Solutions or something.
Yeah, they're basically a little company that makes registration stuff for conventions.
Well, they made a registration solution.
Yeah, they provide registration services.
Yeah, so they have a system of taking names and money and printing out these awesome real cards for conventions. And if you won't have a convention, you can hire them to do it for you.
And he seems to do a very good job. I mean, I know Otakon considered using him in the past and turned him down, and I really don't know why, but I'm really impressed with the way they do their business.
I really like the cards, the quality of the cards and the quality of the computer setup. And
yep.
The remembering of previous conventions, I think that's all really, really cool, and that's the way it should be.
Plus, the guy who was running all this was sitting around, and we ended up having food with him for dinner, and he's a really cool dude. I can't believe I forgot his name.
Yeah, he went to RIT also.
Yeah, like before we were even born.
Yeah, he went to RIT in 1982, and we were born in 1982, and we went to RIT in 2000.
He's describing buildings as new that we thought of as the old crap buildings they were going to get rid of.
Yeah, and he was in Computer Science House like the second or third year of it. So.
Yep, it was fun.
Yep.
Can't believe I forgot his name, but I don't feel bad because I forgot the names of most of the people I met at this con.
That's
and
fine.
I only remember the two I'm going to mention because I have their business cards in front of me.
Yeah, we should have taken his business card.
Yeah,
he can find it at his website. I think it was with stonekeep.com or something like that.
Yeah, I'll find him.
If it's not stonekeep.com and there's something bad at stonekeep.com, don't blame me.
Yeah, so we go in then, and I mean, I guess I knew what to expect because I've been to gaming cons before, but I think Scott and our friend Peter came with us were a little bit underwhelmed at first.
Well, I knew what was going to go on there, but it was much...
smaller?
It was a little bit smaller than I thought it would be.
Just a few rooms.
Yeah.
I figured there
would be a lot more... I mean, the gaming library, like the pile of board games, was about the size I expected. But the number of tables and space was a lot less than I thought.
Yeah, well, the main reason for that was simply that this con moved hotels, and this hotel wasn't as good as the previous hotel, in my opinion.
Yeah, this hotel, I mean, they had, it looked like they had panels in the pool.
Yeah, they did have panels in the pool.
So that's not good at all.
They used pretty much every room they could use, and every game we played, it was just a cacophony constantly. We failed at learning to play a game, a first for us, because of that, which we'll get into later.
Yep. So the first thing we did was there was supposed to be a Burning Wheel demo at 10, and that's what we really wanted to do, is try out this Burning Wheel RPG system.
Yep, we've mentioned a lot, but it's something that I demoed the combat for last year at UberCon with the same dude, Luke Crane, and I thought it was awesome. And this year, since I was bringing two of my friends with me, I figured, all right, let's do it with you two so you can see how awesome it was, and I won't just feel like I'm crazy.
Yep, so It was supposed to be at 10. I go at 10, and the guy said he was doing it for two other guys. And he said, come back at 10:30. So we hung out around, you know, looking around the con, which took about 5 minutes.
Yeah, we ran across many scary people.
That's what gaming cons have, scary people.
I mean, I guess I'm really used to anime cons, and I forget, but in an anime con, I'd say the ratio of cool people to normal people to scary people is heavily weighted toward cool and normal people.
I'd say for every 10 people at an anime con, you'll have one or two cool people.
By cool, we mean like, you know, someone you go, whoa, that's that guy, something like that.
Maybe five or six, you know, normal people, and then like one or two schlubby, nasty people.
There were quite a number of quite large individuals with quite odoriferous zones of control wandering about like blimps.
I say the gaming con is pretty much half disgusting people, half not disgusting people. And cool people, handful.
Yeah, well, we ran across, like, there was a lot of cool things. Like, I forget his name, but one of the writers who kind of took over the work of Lovecraft after he died.
You know, he was a guest of the con, I think. He's C.J. Henderson, I think.
Yeah, that was his name.
Yep.
Yeah, cool dude. He was like, hey, check out my books, woo. And then we ran into this thing called Scared on Staten Island.
Now, at first, I thought it might be like, ooh, you go there and, you know, you have fun in some old building or something.
Yeah, they had this video, and it showed people, like, wandering around with little electronic devices looking for things. It looked like some sort of cool LARP-type infiltration thing.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe like a LARP, like, that involves some sort of ghosts, and, like, you would carry these devices around, and then they set up things in the building on Staten Island to make them go off, to make you think there are ghosts there, and then you're supposed to do stuff based on that.
Yep, so we stood there watching the video to see what it was all about, and you know what? Just Randy. It's just freaking, they think there's ghosts and they're hunting them. They're like paranormal investigator bullshit.
You know, it didn't even seem like the people selling it actually thought there were ghosts. It just seemed like they wanted you to think there were ghosts and they were selling some amusement thing.
But yeah, they talked a lot about the equipment they used to detect ghosts, and oh my god.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of bullshit trying to take money from people, you know.
I mean, I won't blame UberCon, because I guess anyone who pays them money will get some space there.
Yeah, it seemed like they paid a lot of money, and they weren't getting a lot of attention, so I think that worked out well.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you see anything called Scared on Staten Island, or Scared anywhere, and it looks like that, don't do it. It's just a waste of your money. So, then we did the Burning Wheel demo.
Yeah, and it was awesome.
Very awesome.
Now, we're going to do a whole show separate on Burning Wheel at some point, because there's just too much to say about it, and we'd really like to get the creator of it on the show.
And we'd like to get our books.
Yes, we all ordered the books for Burning Wheel the day after we got back from the con.
Yeah,
we didn't order them that night for reasons that we'll get into at the end of this show.
So we're going to avoid talking about the system itself, and we'll just talk about, you know, the game we actually played and, you know, what happened in those games. So the demo was three characters, which, like, just fit us like, whoa.
Yeah, it was a conniving little scrawny thief guy, Scott.
It wasn't a scrawny thief guy. It was a...
You had two little knives. You could maybe poke me a little bit.
It was a wicked knife criminal, like, guy.
Yeah,
like,
some criminal.
On his path, like, if he got levels, I guess, whatever it is, he would have become, like, a mafia or something.
Yeah. I was a froofy elf trying to get back the sword of his father.
Froofy elf.
And our friend Pete was a freaking dwarf with a big sword who also wanted the other sword.
It's the same as always.
Yeah, and basically, Luke Crane, the guy who made Burning Wheel, was running these demos.
I'm pretty sure he's the guy who made it.
Yeah, he is. And he set up this demo, basically, just to kind of show off how the system works. And it was set up so that there was conflict in the party right away. Mm-hmm. All three of us had goals. Only one of us was going to get our goal. And it showed us the various systems within the game that allow conflict between characters or role players to be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked really well.
All too well. But I guess that's what happens when something is, you know, set up.
Well, I think one thing that really helped it is that Luke is one hell of a dungeon master, and he really gets into it.
Yeah, he definitely does get all over it. But at the same time, it makes it seem like being the GM in a Burning Wheel game is either a whole lot of work, or like you kind of have to get into it, or else it, you know,
Well, it depends a lot on what you're doing, because I could see a game of Burning Wheel where you don't even need a GM.
Yeah, it's like at one hand you can go with a lazy GM, but on the other hand the GM needs to be awesome and know everything about the game in order to, you know, it's kind of a weird, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, part of that might be the fact that we don't know the system yet.
Yeah.
So we definitely relied on him to tell us when
to
pick
up dice.
We know
it, we just don't know all the details. We know the very general, we know enough to play if the GM can handle everything else for us.
But we don't know, like, all right, when is this skill applicable? How many dice do I pick up and throw against this? How many successes do I need?
It seemed like when this skill is applicable is sort of subjective to me.
Yeah, well, I saw a lot of time. I mean, here's an example of something that happened. Most role-playing game systems seem to be set up where the only game mechanic that is used to resolve conflicts other than role-playing is combat, fighting with people. Imagine if there were a combat-like system for characters arguing with each other.
So you can resolve conflicts non-violently with dice and role-playing combined.
We'll explain that in greater detail, but it basically...
In some other show, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing this seems to do is that, one, I tend to play... I'm very charismatic. I role-play really well. I'm not trying to, you know, but yeah. And I often would end up playing a character with a very low charisma, especially at cons or whatever. But I'd end up talking circles around someone else and playing a character that had a much higher charisma than my character actually had. This prevents all that bullshit, and you can only do what your character can do.
Yep. So, what happened in the game? First, they were arguing about who should take the sword, and I just went and took it.
Yep.
And then they tried to physically stop me.
And you ran away.
And I ran away. And then I couldn't run away all the way and get escape.
And then we had the argument, and this is when the dice came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was me, the elf, and Pete, the dwarf, arguing within the confines of this game mechanic on who is the rightful owner of the sword. And the way it works, basically, to simplify really, really, really broadly, is that you make a point, or a rebuttal, or whatever, and you have to roleplay it a little bit, but if you make a point, no matter what you say, it counts as a point action. Like, point, it's my fucking sword, you asshole. Or point something cool that I say in a first-person role-playing way. Then I roll dice to see how effective that is. But the thing is, if you're going to make a point, or you're going to make a rebuttal, or you're going to make a, you know, an instigate, or whatever you're going to do, you have to actually role-play. If you can't come up with it, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it doesn't matter so much how well you do it verbally, because all that matters is how well your character would have been able to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then the other cool thing is people can help you out. Like when Rim and Pete were arguing, I didn't really want either of them to win. I wanted them to just kind of bring each other down. And, you know, like they both hurt each other and then I can kill whoever's left easily. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, make each other weaker and then one guy will eventually lose and I can pick off the weak guy because I'm unharmed. But so what I did is when they were arguing, they would make points at each other or whatever.
And he'd help back and forth. Like, he'd help Pete with a point. Then he'd help me with a point. And we just whittle each other down that way.
Mm-hmm. And so when you help someone, you give them a dice, and it's pretty cool.
Now, the main effect it seems to have on the game is that whenever there's a conflict, it's broken down into incredibly abstract terms. I mean, probably more abstract than any system I've ever played before. Basically, if you have a conflict, character A wants X, character B wants Y, instead of having to, you know, dance around it within a system, you just, all right, open up the conflict rules. I want this, I want this. You resolve it so that now you know what the end result is. No matter what happens, this is the result. This is the person who will win the conflict. And then you can role play it all out from there. So you don't have to worry about technicalities or, oh, if I just fail, I'll try again, like people tend to do in D&D. It's just resolved. Scott ran away from us, me and Pete, with the sword. And he got away. So we could chase him for pretty much over and over and over again, but he'd always get away because we'd already resolved that plot-wise, he'll get away. So we have to try to resolve this in another manner.
Mm-hmm. And then we already resolved that I would not escape. So we would role-play me escaping a little bit. And if he wanted to, we could role-play me escaping a little bit more. But I would never escape all the way because you already found out that I'm not going to escape all the way.
So it seems to remove a lot of this metagame kind of crap and just forces you to play your character right there, deal with the conflict, and I really can't explain how beautiful it is. You just have to play it.
Yeah, I like how on the character sheet it says your beliefs and your instincts. It's like, here's what you're going to do. There's no more like, you know, having a problem where you don't know what your character wants or having to think it up, it's right there on the paper.
Yep. Now, the way combat and all these things seem to work is that you have a piece of paper and they have a piece of paper and you choose your actions, but you choose them simultaneously without the other person knowing. So you choose, like, your action and the next two actions in the future. Then you both reveal your sheets and play it out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real quick. It's real brutal. Two people fighting with a sword does not last long because someone gets stabbed and bleeds right away.
Stabbed in the face. All right, let's leave any further details for another show.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this again at the end of this show when we describe at least the game we played.
Yeah.
Because we played a demo in the morning, and then at night we played a full-on story-based game with a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah, the demo was just for us to figure out how the system works and whether we liked it, and then the nighttime was actually a game of real.
Nighttime is the nighttime.
Yeah, so...
Nice interruption. Let's do some things of the day and then get back to UberCon.
So since it's, it gets Tuesday, right? So there's games, but we're not going to do any video games, really. But I have a thing of the day related to video games.
This is actually kind of cool.
So, I don't know if you've played Kung Fu for the NES. It's a game where this guy just basically walks sideways, and when bad guys come up to him, you punch or kick them.
It's
and
one of the original Nintendo games.
Original. It's real hard.
Before the MMC chips Nintendo games.
Yeah, this ran on the same chip that, like, baseball and ice hockey and...
Ice Climbers.
Yeah, Metroid. Well, not Metroid 1.
No, Metroid was an MMC.
Yeah, that was, like, one of the first ones, though.
Yes, I think it was the first one. Yeah, anyway.
Maybe. It's really old. And some guy took Kung Fu, and in Flash, he made Kung Fu the remix.
It's like an OC remix, only it's an actual remix of a video game instead of video game music.
So it plays just like Kung Fu, except the bad guy is a little different. And he added an awesome plot with some pixel art. And he added some new moves. So, like, after you beat level 1, you get the Hadouken, and you can use it, and it's pretty awesome. And, like, when you jump kick guys, their heads come off, and... Yeah, it's a lot more fun than the original Kung Fu, I'd say. It's a little hard to control with the keyboard, but you can kind of customize the keys a little bit. The music, I love the music a lot because it feels like old arcade game music, you know, that's all awesome. I like that kind of sounding stuff. But it's really, really hard. Like, even on easy mode, it's hard. I couldn't beat more
Well,
than
good. The original Kung Fu was hard as well.
This is harder than the original Kung Fu, even on easy mode. I couldn't beat more than level 1. Level 2, I died. So, have fun.
All right. So, I don't know how many of you have lived with cats before, but, well, a lot of people, a lot of the front row crew types always laugh, oh, Rim, he likes the cat girls. But honestly... I really don't like cats that much.
You like the fox girls and whatever.
Yeah. But I really don't like cats that much. I mean, I don't dislike cats, but I always get the feeling that most cats are barely aware that I even exist. And this was fortified by having to live with some cats for a while when I was on co-op a long time ago. But anyway, you know how cats seem to react to things in strange ways? Well, this is a video that basically proves to me that cats are automatons. Because if you put a piece of tape on a cat in different places, the cat will you can control the cat with tape, basically. Just watch the video, you'll see what I mean.
I think basically what the video teaches us is that cats move based on their feeling and not based on looking with their eyeballs. Like, if a cat feels a wall on its left, it'll go to the right.
Yeah.
So if you put a piece of tape on the left side of the cat, it thinks it's touching something on the left, and it wants to get away from that, so it goes to the right.
This did remind me of our friend James and Lisa. They had a cat named Lily,
mm-hmm.
and they would stick a little hair clip to her tail, and that was the end of her. She couldn't walk. As far as she was concerned, that was the end of the world, and there was a lead weight tying her tail to the ground.
Yeah, the cat would just slump on the ground and not move.
Yeah, this is watch the video. You'll see what we mean. Freaking cats.
Yeah. It's funny because it's Japanese, too.
Yeah, also, strangely enough, a while ago when I emerge update New Year's Deep World, which meant I upgraded all the stuff on my Gen 2 box, sound stopped working in Flash and Google Video. And it magically started working again, and I haven't done anything to my computer.
I think you did something with some sort. There must be some sort of blocking going on with OSS also. Something.
Yeah, there's something. So I'm going to look
at
my AOS.
I don't think you configure your DMix stuff properly.
Yeah, I'm going to look through my AOSS stuff and try to figure that one out later. Or you know what? I won't care because I'm buying a new computer in the next month.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
anyway.
In Ubuntu, you don't have those problems theoretically.
Yeah, well, part of the reason I use Gentoo on this box is that this box is slow as shit anyway.
Mm. Ubuntu's not any slower or faster.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
So after the Burning Wheel demo, we went to a mall nearby to try to get some food.
I got some food at this Italian place, got chicken parm sandwich for $5.
Yeah, now Pete and I did much better. Because this is a, you know how almost every mall food court now is the same? They've got that Chinese place, and next to it, the Cajun food place that is the same food the Chinese food place has.
Not every mall food court, but all mall food courts that have been invaded by that company are all the same.
Well, this is an old school food court.
And it's not really old school, it just hasn't been invaded by that company.
It's old school compared to this company, which seems to be spreading like wildfire.
Mm.
And they had this one little Greek diner type place in it, and Pete and I went there, and we got gyros, and these were the best gyros we've ever had in our lives. He had a giant flank of meat, and he cut pieces off of it, put them over a fire, and then gave them to us.
It's called shawarma. It's in Israel in every single block, and in Israel it looked a lot better than his solid colored piece of meat, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, what do you want? We're not in Israel. You're lucky to see anything like that.
I know.
And you know that the Greeks probably call it something else.
Well, it's, you know, it's a big leg of a lamb. It's a lamb on a stick that spins around vertically.
The point is we got good food.
Yeah.
But at the mall, we ran into some scary UberCon types.
It looked like this normal little girl, I guess.
Yeah,
she looked like the kind of girl you see at an anime con.
Yeah, kind of cute, definitely young. I mean, probably a decade younger than me.
Probably high school looked like.
Yeah. And we just had a weird encounter with this girl.
She just came up to us and was like, hi, and then started talk. She said weird things.
Well, she walked over to me and shook my hand and asked, like, she said she knew me from somewhere, and I didn't know her from anywhere.
Yeah, and she looked at us all weird, and then
though the freaky thing was, the only reason I was confused by this is that she looks, like, scarily similar to a girl I knew a long time ago. Like, creepily similar. So she was looking at me, and I was looking at her, and I thought, there's no way that's what's her name. There's no way. And it wasn't, but it was just weird.
That's good.
Luckily, we were able to avoid any sort of contact with creepy people for the rest of this con.
Yeah, so also at the mall, I managed to get the Darth Vader that transforms into a... Well, TIE Fighter that transforms into a Darth Vader.
Yeah, the one you couldn't find anywhere, but when you finally got it, discovered that it's actually really a crappy toy.
It's not that crappy.
It's crap. You broke it immediately.
I fixed it.
Yeah. It doesn't... Alright, to tell you how shitty this toy that Scott bought and is talking up is, basically when it's transformed into Darth Vader, it looks like a robot with a tiny little Darth Vader head floating over it.
You know, if something wasn't designed in the first place to be transformable, it's a miracle that it does that well at all.
You know what? A turd is not designed to be an airplane. If I fashion a crude airplane out of a turd, it's still a turd. I just wanted to say turd a bunch of times.
You're a turd. No, but it's much better. It's pretty much the best it can be. My gripe with these toys is that they made them with the shitty plastic. Like the shittiest plastic available. If it was made with better plastic, it'd be a better toy. Just ding.
But I point out that at least in terms of the kind of toy it is, it's a step up from Darth Vader on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Well, it's a TIE Fighter that transforms into Darth Vader. It's Star Wars and Transformers.
No, don't say that. It doesn't transform into a Darth Vader. It transforms into a big, blocky, robot-looking thing with a tiny Darth Vader head floating over it.
Whatever. It has a red lightsaber.
The head is floating. It's not even a... It's just this floating Darth Vader head.
It doesn't
and it's
look like
three,
it floats to me. But
it's like three sizes too small for the body. It's absurd.
Whatever.
Yeah, also in the mall, we went to a GameStop. And we ended up walking out. They had something I wanted to buy, an Intellivision game collection for the GameCube. And
why don't you look for it online?
Yeah. So I stood in line, and I ran into the problem that basically I've never successfully bought something at GameStop without having to stand in line behind some stupid kid and his mom selling back like 100 games, and every GameStop employee there is helping this one kid who's going to take forever instead of ringing me up and letting me get on with my life.
Yeah, it seems like the game stores, especially the GameStops, I guess, just don't process, you know, customers at the counter quickly. It's like that's not their priority.
Not even quickly.
They're not even thinking about it.
They don't even do it properly, let alone quickly.
Yeah, it's like, okay, there are like three things you can do at a GameStop. You can pre-order something, you can buy something that's on the shelf, or you can sell something back. I guess you can return something, which is different from selling something back. So four things you can do. The only transaction that is quick and easy is buying something. Pre-ordering takes forever, selling stuff back takes forever, and returning stuff takes forever. You need to streamline all four of those things so that they all take barely any time.
You know what? In the very least, if there's a kid selling back 100 games and you've got two employees, how about employee number two takes care of that growing line of people who just wants to buy something instead of you both helping the kid while I get pissed off enough to drop my game on the floor and walk out?
Yeah, seriously. I mean,
I've walked out of like three of the last six times I've gone to a GameStop, I just walked out and didn't buy what I wanted just because I wasn't going to stand there for 10 minutes.
I just don't understand. It's like they're not, the employees there are just not thinking. They're just, that's what happens when you,
I've met very few intelligent GameStop employees. No offense to all of you out there, but goddamn.
I've met very few intelligent employees in brick and mortar stores, period.
I used to know a cool guy who worked at a Best Buy, but he knew all the Best Buy scams and didn't care, and he got me a lot of discounted stuff, so he was a cool guy.
Anyway, enough about, they had every Resident Evil for the GameCube, even the rare ones, but yep, they were $30, so whatever.
Yeah, if they were cheaper than that, we would have picked them up.
Yeah, I currently only have Resident Evil 1, so I need 0, 2, 3, 4, and Code Veronica.
But thus refreshed, we headed back to the con, and they had an open gaming room where you could just check out a board game, go to a table. The table thing didn't freaking work. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
we ended up stealing tables from people.
This is a problem is that you look around the room, and you have a board game, and you want to play it, and you need a table. So there's a room full of tables for this purpose.
All right, let's see. Let's say there are four tables that currently don't have anyone playing a game at them. Table number one has fat dude eating his Chinese food, taking up the whole table.
So now we can't eat at that table. So now there are two tables.
We'll play at that table. We're
play
not
at that
eat.
Table. So there are two tables that are completely vacant. One of them, we go over to the table, and there's stuff on the table, and there's stuff in the chairs at the table. That makes it look like someone's there. Now, you don't want to be all breaking the table etiquette and kicking them out of their table.
But at the same time, what if they're just leaving their stuff there like asshats, which it turned out they were?
Yeah. What are we supposed to do? There's no one around in the area that looks like they're claiming the stuff, so we can't say, excuse me, are you using this table? Can we play a game here? And there's a schedule on the table of official events happening at the table, and they're not happening right now, or they're not happening soon, so we don't know, is someone coming, are they not, who knows? So it was very difficult to sit at a table, so we ended up sitting at one, and then a guy came over, and he was like, you know, oh yeah, I have this table now, but then he said, you know what, I'm going to play the game you're playing with you.
Which was Vegas Showdown.
That was a good game.
Yeah, it was actually really fun. Scott had played it before and he talked about it, and now I got to play it and Pete got to play it. I won by a lot. I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm. But well, that's because I forgot two of the ways to score, which is filling up the hotel and filling up the
Yeah, I was also real canny with my money. It's weird. I'm really good at the first time I play a game, I'll often win it, and then I'll lose for a long time because I'll come up with the, oh, that's the obvious stupid strategy that'll only work against people who've never played the game before. And then after that, I have to come up with a real strategy.
Yeah. I mean, I messed up because I knew how to play because I'd played it once before. And I got in every auction in the game, I bid for something, and I always got it real cheap, which was great. But that was because I thought I was buying the right things, which I was.
You were buying all lounges.
Well, yeah, because the last time I played a guy who won, he won because of the cards that said, get bunches of stuff.
Yeah, but you know what? There's also cards that say get bunches of stuff if you have restaurants. That's why I won.
Yeah, I think the thing was is when I played with that other guy, we had like a six people game going on. So a lot more cards came out and, so, you know, it was very different.
Yeah.
And also, there was a lot more outbidding people in that game as opposed to this one, where a lot of times we just all bid on different stuff and got it for the small price.
Yep. But we played that. That was fun. The guy was cool. And we'll get back to the guy later because we actually went and played more games.
Yeah, there was a reason he had that table is because he was using it to demo games from his company.
Yeah, so after that game, we left to let him use the table to actually demo the games he wanted to demo. And we did something that we're very ashamed of. Well, first, We wanted to play the Doom game, you know, the Doom board.
Well, we wanted to at least see what it was like. Yeah. I figured it was going to be like zombies.
Yep, I figured it was going to be something similar. So we check it out, we open it up, and it's a mess of pieces, and it's basically the same as HeroQuest or Necromunda.
Yeah, only it's a lot more complicated than either one of those.
Yeah, so it looked fun, but it wasn't really what we were looking to play at that juncture in our lives.
And it was so incredibly complicated and large, we didn't have time for it.
Yeah, not in terms of rules,
especially
but in terms
since
of,
we had time to figure it out.
Yep, not in terms of rules, but in terms of stuff we had to set up physically.
Yeah, it's like, you know, at a game convention, I want to play new games, but at the same time, I only have so many hours there, especially since I'm only gaming for one day. So if it takes more than a few minutes to figure out how to play, and, you know, it's like that doubles the time it takes to play the game itself, and you end up losing a whole lot. So you want to find someone to teach you how to play, and that's really the best.
Or yeah, it wasn't the kind of game we wanted to play.
Yeah.
But we could have figured it out, so we just put it away, whatever. And then there's Goa.
Goa was a game I had seen many people play, and many people spoke highly of.
So we wanted to play it for a long time, and there it was.
So I figured that's the perfect game to try to play. It'll probably take, you know, just the right amount of time, and we'll be all good.
This was the first time in any of our lives that we have ever failed at learning to play a board game and given up in frustration.
I think that part of it was the room was very loud.
Yeah, the room was a cacophony.
And part of it was that we didn't have a whole lot of time. We were sort of like rushing in, like trying to hurry up and play the game because, you know, we're at a convention. We don't want to lose time.
But don't let that dissuade you from the fact that Goa is an incredibly fucking complex game.
Oh my God, is the game complex.
Imagine, to sum up, me reading the rules. All right, there are three kinds of turns, blah, blah, blah. On a turn, you can take any of six actions. There is a whole page describing each of these actions. There are tigers and fucking fish. That's a whole separate game mechanic. There are these cards that do everything, and they have a million symbols on them. There's these other cards that do something else, but only when you do the first thing.
That was really what screwed me up, is the cards. There are cards. There are many different decks of cards. Some of them are like different currencies. Like, they're not actually different money, but they're like colonists. So like there'll be colonist cards of three and colonist cards of one. So you can have a colonist card, you hold it, it's worth three colonists. You know, that kind of, it's like a currency, but the currency is called colonists.
It was painful.
Yeah. There are cards, there's a deck of cards, and on the cards themselves are pictures of crazy stuff. Like tons and tons of symbols from all parts of the game board. And I couldn't decipher what these cards meant, and every single one of them was different. And I was just like, wow.
Yep, so what we're breaking through, basically we're going through the rules in order, like step by step, and we, like, I'm reading the rules out loud, and they're moving stuff around, we're figuring it out. And
it didn't help that you never referred to the front page. You'd be like, yeah, move the colonist card, and we'd say, what are the colonist cards? And you'd say, the colonist cards, but you never looked in the beginning of the book to show us that's what a colonist card is.
You know why?
Is.
Because the page that described all that was open in front of both of you.
Yeah, it was upside down and facing away from us.
Oh, no,
you
it was
were
upside down
it.
And away from you,
and,
not
and when
Pete.
You were reading in the middle of the book, it was on the front page, and we had to turn your hands to go
I point
see
out
it.
That by the time I got to the middle of the book, it didn't matter anymore.
Well, no, because when we found
we'd
out...
We had already figured out what everything was at that point.
Well, there was a point at which we figured out the progress board, whatever it's called.
Oh, that was way later. Basically, we just worked through the game bit by bit, and we figured out how to figure out what to bid on,
mm-hmm.
and then we figured out how this progress board thing worked.
The progress board, I think, was cool, actually.
Yeah. And then we figured out how the turn order went, and we figured out what the six actions you could take were, mm-hmm. and how they related. All right, we're set. Then I turn the page... And there's a whole nother section to the book dedicated, just as thick as the whole first section, dedicated solely to describing what each of the individual tiles did.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this thing about tigers and fishes. And
expeditions or something?
Yeah. And, oh my, we just gave up. We couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We gave up. We put the game away. We were defeated by Goa.
I was still confused about the different, like, spice bags and what was an open field and what wasn't and where you could put the spices and where you couldn't and what you did with them.
It didn't help that there's two kinds of rules in German board games I found. There's the old school and the new school. And it seems that the new school rules are very concise. They use the same kind of language that RFCs use. You can do this. You may do this. You must do this. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In old school rules... It's basically just a paragraph and some examples, and then a paragraph and some examples.
Yeah, it says, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this.
And the rules are basically just a whole bunch of examples, and you're supposed to learn the game from these.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that way at all.
I think that's just the people who wrote the rules have bad powers of explanation, so they need to say, you know, if it's like this, you do it like this, you know. You know, if it's like this, then you do something like this.
Because I like Entdecker, but Entdecker's written that way, too.
Yeah.
It's all the old, like, old style games are that way. It's weird.
We should make, a hobby of rewriting game rules in awesome ways.
I'll bet someone's already. We should look at the Board Game Geek page.
Board Game Geek might have it. We should go check it out.
Yeah. So we'd failed, we gave up, and we had to give up the table we were at anyway.
Yeah, but don't let that make you think Go is a bad game, because I'm still pretty sure it's a very good game.
Yeah, if we
it might
sit
not
down,
be the best game ever, but it's I think it's a good game.
If we sit down in a quiet room and learn how to play the game, I think we're going to have fun.
Yeah.
So then we look up, and we see the guy we'd played Vegas Showdown with earlier sitting alone at his table. No one's come to demo his stuff, or at least no one's currently demoing. They might have.
He didn't look like he was asking people to demo. He was just kind of sitting there. So
yeah, but he's his name is Alan Ernstein, and he's apparently the head of Hangman Games. I have his business card. I'm holding it. I'll link to it in the post about the episode.
Yeah, he seemed like a pretty cool gaming guy.
Like, he makes games, and he had all these games he'd made there.
Mm-hmm.
So we went over, we're like, hey, so show us what you got. And he pulled out this game. It was called, what, Gem Fair?
Crystal Fair? Something around that.
I'm sure it's on his website.
Yep. Well, it's coming out April something, right?
Yep. Like, the game hadn't come out yet. It's coming out real soon. And he had, like his demo copy. And we played it. And he basically ran us through the game. And I got to say, for it was an independent little game. Like, he just made this. Like, you know, laminated pieces of whatever and little gems.
The game was just little... You know, shields to hide what you've got, paper money, little, you know, this little glass gemmies that you can get for, you know, almost nothing at a game store.
Like the counters you use in Magic back in the day.
Yeah, for your life. And
what? No, you used a D20 for your life. You use those for tokens.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You use them for whatever. Glass baubles that are generically used in all sorts of games.
Yes.
And a card that had rows for each of the colors and then numbers in the sides.
And basically, it's a game of you have gems, and they're secret. And everyone else has gems, and they're also secret. And different gems are worth different amount, and there are different numbers of different gems. And you take turns trading gems with people semi-secretly, trying to get the most points at the end of the game. I'm not going to go in greater detail than that, because...
Yep.
Yeah.
It was just a surprisingly fun game. The only reason I lost is because it took me two turns to actually figure out what was going on. Like, oh, because there were so many purple gems, you know, that I figured the purple gems aren't really worth anything. There's so many of them. No, you can score just as many points with the purple ones as you can with the ultra rare white ones.
Yep, by the end of the game, Pete had racked up all the purple points and just dominated us.
Yeah. So that was not, you know, the great, I should have realized it's not about which some colors are worth more. It's about, you know, you got to hoard, you know, certain colors and get rid of other colors in order to get more of the same color. That way you can score points.
It's mostly a statistics game and a bluffing game.
Yeah, it's a bluffing game and it's sort of a stock market game too.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I imagine with more players, the stock market part would matter more.
Now, well, we're not going to go into more detail on that, but it's Hangman Games, and the guy, Alan, was really cool. We're going to try to get him on the show for an interview sometime.
Yep.
And then we'll probably talk more about this, but if you've never experienced the indie kind of games that are, you know, they're kind of under the radar, check this guy's website out, because the games he makes seem to be really high quality.
I'm going to go to his website sometime and see if any of his games are really, really awesome looking, and maybe I'll buy one.
Hey, he lives in Maryland.
No.
We should tell him to come to Otakon with us.
I don't think he's the big Otakon type.
No, he definitely seems to be the gamer geek alone.
Mm-hmm. All right, so when we were done with that, we were just pretty much waiting for the Burning Wheel demo, and we were hungry.
We were hungry, we were exhausted, and our ears were ringing from being in that loud room.
So we went to the lobby, where it was nice and quiet, and there was free milk, and the registration guy was there, and some other Obercon people, and a bunch of guys playing MAME and... whatever emulated games on
Linux.
Yeah,
they were playing Bomberman at the time.
Yeah, Super Bomberman it looked like. Or MAME Bomberman, I couldn't even tell.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had a nice little Myth TV Linux emulating going on.
Yeah, we talked to the guy who set that up and we got some tips.
Mm-hmm. We talked to some girl, I don't know what her name was, I forget.
What, the staffer?
Yeah.
Oh, I totally forgot her name.
Yeah.
I hope she got the piece of paper I wrote.
Yeah, she seemed pretty cool and smart and whatever. We tried to play the camel game with her through the desert, but we failed because the food showed up.
Yep. Oh, God, the food. So we wanted to get food. We didn't want to leave. So we go ask the hotel, and they said, yeah, there's a Chinese place and a pizza place, and they gave us both.
We really wanted Chinese food.
We're about to order it, and then this is how we met this girl. She comes over, and she's like, don't order the Chinese. I ordered it an hour ago, and it hasn't come yet.
And we're like, oh, we can't afford to wait an hour.
Yep. So we order Domino's Pizza.
And we saw a Domino's guy come in and leave the hotel. And when he left, we asked him, you know, where do we tell you to deliver to? And he just said, tell me to deliver to the lobby. And he's like, okay.
Yep. So we order pizza, and it comes still before this poor girl has gotten her Chinese food.
Yeah, like literally like 10, 15 minutes after we ordered, the Domino's guy is back, and he's got our stuff.
It was fantastic.
We shared it with the registration guy.
Yeah, we shared with, and we also, I forget how poor gamers are, because I guess I used to be real poor when I went to cons like that.
Me too.
Because later we bought two liters of Coke, and we were drinking one, and the other one was just sitting there unopened. And this gamer comes up and he's like, dude, I'll do anything if you'll give me some of that Coke. And we're like, here you go, take the whole thing. And he didn't know what to do to that. Like, he didn't know how to react.
Yeah, we were like, he's like, I can't just take it from you. And we're like, it's $1, 2 liters of soda. None of us really want it. What the hell? And he's like, let me give you something. I'm like, I don't know, do a dance. I don't forget what we made him do.
We made him say who shot first in episode 4 of Star Wars.
That's because he had a Han Solo shirt.
Yeah.
I noticed the Han Solo shirt and I was thinking of the same thing, but I figured that was real stupid.
Yeah, it was real stupid, but I wasn't going to take his money. He's obviously a poor gamer.
Yeah. So whatever, we fed a bunch of people and we made friends. I talked to this old guy who like brought his 16-year-old son there about some stuff.
Yeah, he's definitely cool because he doesn't seem to be in with the geek thing, but he understands his son is, and he's letting his son do it all.
Yeah, he figures it's better than doing drugs and all that stuff.
And he's right.
Seemed like a smart dad.
Yeah, so we told him about Otakon, and there's a good bet this kid's going to Otakon now.
Yeah. I also asked him about comic books, and it was pretty funny that I said, did you read Uncle Scrooge comics? And he was like, oh, yeah. So now I really like asking people that, just to see.
Now, I'll note that we mentioned that we were going to UberCon, and we basically told you that if you want to see us there, you won't be able to miss us. We stand out.
And no one came to see us.
However, we do stand out, and we have evidence of this now. While we were sitting in the lobby, you know, we were just talking about other cons and stuff. One of the staffers of UberCon comes over to us and is like, hey, could you guys write down all that stuff you just said? You guys really sound like you know what you're talking about. We're like, oh, okay.
Even though what we were talking about really had nothing to do with suggestions for UberCon.
I think
we were
talking about Yowie at that point.
Yeah, I think we were talking about other cons and stuff. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah.
We wrote down that they should fix their table problem, because that's the only problem they have.
Yeah, we wrote down a very specific, detailed solution to that. We'll see if they implement it next year. So, who knows? Maybe we'll see if they'll want us to be staff or something. Maybe we'll do Geek Nights there live.
Maybe.
I'd like to do some Geek Nights there.
That'd be cool. So, next, we finally made our way to the awaited Burning Wheel game. The name of the game, I think, was...
I forget.
Inheritance?
Yes, Inheritance. It was a Viking funeral.
So, the game started where...
Well, first off, keep in mind, Scott, we probably shouldn't, because this is a thing that he does often, and he's run the same game at many places. I don't think we want to spoil the plot.
We'll tell the summary of the plot.
Yeah, don't tell how it ends or all the secrets or anything.
Well, it ends the way the players make
it. Well, yeah, but not the secrets, at least.
Of course, we'll not reveal the secrets.
Like the text of the will.
Yeah, so... The characters are the Grandpa Viking, who is dead and is going to Valhalla, and you start the game at his funeral. There is...
His son, Tyrvald.
His other son, Kare? I think. We didn't have a PC for... We didn't have a player for that character. So
wait, hold on. I've got my notes from the frickin' game.
Awesome.
Oh, the notes from the frickin' game are from the perspective of my character.
Great. There was Kare, who was the other son.
Yeah, he was a berserker. Well, I don't know how much you guys want to hear about the details of the game in that
regard. We're not going to give too many details.
It was a bunch of Vikings, and the game started, and I guess the coolest part of this is that we ended up playing this with a really cool group of people.
Yeah, when I got there, they were like these schlubby guys, and I was like, oh, they look like schlubby guys, eh. But then they turned out to be cool guys, so.
Like, one guy who was sitting there was this really big guy. Not big like fat, but big like Pete, like a big, muscular kind of Viking-looking dude.
Tall,
anyway.
He was pretty tall, he had a big beard.
Had a big, booming voice and a beard, and he played Tyrvald, the Viking father.
Well, and the new Viking father.
And he was so in character that when it got, I mean, the game got really heated, but heated in character, not heated out of character. We're all laughing with each other afterward. But like, it got to the point where one of the kids who was playing a Viking insulted this man in front of his host, like at his lodge, and he's yelling at the guy, and it was just amazing.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
That guy was scary in character.
The only disappointment I had in the game is my character was this, like, magic immortal dwarf guy or something, and I was the one who had the will, and I was all awesome, but I had these magic runes. And they had the power to change someone's belief.
Like, bind someone to their fate.
Yeah, it was really cool, but I never got a chance to use them because I was going to use them at one point, but I ended up just, you know, winning the duel battle of fate or whatever. It's a duel of wits, so I didn't need to use it. So,
I thought the way Scott handled his character was really good. I mean, it was a powerful character who kind of never did anything directly, but he influenced other people and in the end got his will.
Yep. I mean, the only really direct way I would have done anything is with the magic runes, and that was like, it said on my paper, like, the magic runes will send a man to hell or something like that, so I really didn't want to use them. So I always tried to get my way by any other means possible first.
I love when you smack the Christian priest down about his god.
Yeah. Where's your god now?
That was classic.
Yeah.
But the basic plot, like, to sum up, was that, all right,
the Christian priest was Pete.
Yeah, Pete is quite the scientist, and he ended up playing the Christian missionary priest.
Which is awesome.
It was hilarious. But basically, the grandfather, the elder Viking, is dead, and it begins at the funeral. Now, the current father, Tyrval, the cool guy who was playing him, is like the lead, but he's not the king, but he's basically the leader of where we live. His three sons, the first son was murdered by the third son 10 years ago. So the third son, Einherjar, was banished forever.
Einherjar.
Now, he was supposed to be killed, because I played a priestess of Odin, Gefjun, who wanted him dead.
Rim was the priestess.
Yeah, I played a girl. Get over it.
Whatever.
Actually, my character was kind of cool. That wasn't what I expected.
Yeah.
But the son murdered his eldest brother, and the father, instead of killing him, had him exiled. So the prodigal son, has returned after the grandfather has died, kind of vying for the inheritance, kind of vying to get back into the family. And it was quite a heated scene. Like, you've kind of felt like you were really at this Viking funeral, and these large men are yelling at each other. And it was just an amazing scene.
Mm-hmm. I liked it a whole lot. It was the best role-playing I've had in a long time.
Yes.
It's because I haven't had a lot of role-playing in a long time, but also because it was really awesome.
Well, also, the way Burning Wheel seems to work is that it really enforces you to play. It really enforces playing in character.
I think it's like the system itself, instead of... it seems like D&D and other systems, like, the purpose of them is to abstract the reality in which the role-playing occurs. So the role-playing is completely the burden of the players. And the system just helps you work out combat and what physically happens. But Burning Wheel, it does that in a fun way, but it also seems to be a role-playing catalyst. Like, instead of you have to role-play and here's the system to figure out everything else, it's... this system makes you role play, you know, unless you're a complete doofus.
Yep. I mean, there was one kid who was a little kind of schlubby, definitely wasn't as smart as all the other kids we were playing with. And even he played his character really well just because of the way the system forced him to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't have really the biggest part, but, you know, he did stuff.
And he was a primary mover of the plot because he insulted Tyrvald in his hall, which led to a fight, and someone got stabbed.
Yeah, and it was in character, and it was according to... It's just great.
I mean, it's interesting to watch a system that allows characters to be yelling at each other and arguing, and this conflict just flare up, and then suddenly it comes to blows, and there's a flurry of blades, and now someone's on the ground stabbed. And it was so realistic.
Well, it wasn't really realistic. There was no stabbing and blood.
Yeah, there was.
For real.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah, someone was really bleeding.
Yeah, we freaking hung Pete at the end. He's not going to be on the show anymore.
Oh. Oh. don't talk about that. We're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, but basically, I mean, in the game, the way your characters are set up is you'll have beliefs and instincts.
Mm-hmm.
And, but like, one of the beliefs of... well, I don't think I'll say what the beliefs are, because I don't want to ruin this game for anyone who might play this demo with Luke Crane in the future.
Hey, let me say an instinct of my character that's generic.
Yes.
Was I don't make an oath that I can't fulfill.
Yes. Or the instinct of my character, one of them, is in times of crisis, sacrifice to the Norns.
Yeah, so, you know, that really helps you out. When in D&D, you don't have that sort of information about your character. You have to come up with it, and you have to try to think, what would my character do? And
now, I like that. I'm fine with that. But I know a lot of people, have
well,
trouble
no,
with that.
Well, no, I don't have trouble. It's the trouble isn't, you know, doing it. The trouble is coming up with it in the first place, you know, and it...
So you do have trouble with it.
Well, it's not the same kind of trouble as you're implying. It's a different kind of trouble. The trouble isn't, you know, being the character that I know. It's knowing the character in the first place. And if I come up with a character that, you know, I don't really think about a whole lot and come up with these things, then I can't really do it because there isn't a character to do.
See, for me, it's more that... I mean, I come up with this stuff for my characters anyway. I write pages and pages and pages and pages of backstory like a freaking gamer nerd nut. But what this game does is you have to codify your beliefs in very specific ways and put them on your character sheet, and you get in-game rewards for playing in character.
I think what's really awesome, though, is that Burning Wheel, you don't need to have pages and pages and pages and pages of backstory. All you need is, like maybe one paragraph and, like, a few sentences, and you've got... just as full a character, you know, you might not have the history, of course,
well, you don't
to
have
go
as,
along with
you don't
it.
Have as full a character in terms of backstory, but you have as full
but
a
you
character
have the full
in
character,
terms of role-playing.
In terms of role-playing, it's just 100%. It's full-on. You've got it. You don't have to do tons and tons of effort in coming up with all this
now,
other
stuff.
Now,
of course, I'll point out that we've never played a traditional campaign of Burning Wheel at all, and all we've experienced are scenarios. In this, there was a scenario set up, and we were all given characters. We chose them, and then we played them. So, at the very least, this system allows for that really well because it allows interplayer conflict that's handled gracefully. D&D doesn't handle interplayer conflict at all. If
it
two characters
poorly,
start fighting, it just doesn't work.
It's just broken if characters in D&D are fighting each other. The system wasn't designed for that.
In this game, at least in terms of the mentors we'd played, you're expected to fight. You're expected to hate each other or at least have a disagreement.
Yeah. So, I think what's... I can't say... that Burning Wheel campaigns don't work, but I get the feeling that there's something missing. But I don't know because I haven't read the book, so it's just a feeling that's based on nothing.
I don't think it's so much that Burning Wheel can't do a campaign. I think it's more that Burning Wheel really shines when you play like a one-off scenario from start to finish.
When you play Burning Wheel, in you know you have a scenario that is set up already, but the players don't know the scenario, and they just pick characters and go with it. And the GM tells them what's going on because not a DM, it's a GM in Burning Wheel. And then you go at it in one shot, one night or a few hours. Then that is when it's super super awesome, and for guaranteed. And if you're gonna do one shot role playing, Burning Wheel is definitely the way to go for the most awesome fun that I've ever had, at least.
Yes. So when we do a whole show on this, and we actually interview Luke Crane and maybe some other people, hopefully we'll be able to shed some more light on like more of these specific reasons why Burning Wheel is so awesome and how it actually works with the dice pools and everything.
Yeah, and hopefully in the future, when we actually get the books and run games ourselves, we'll talk about those in hopefully a way that is not painfully nerdy but also entertaining. And
I mean, I guess, put it this way. Currently, Scott and I mean, we live here, and Pete lives nearby, but he lives far enough away to where we can't just hang out every day. Now, we can't play D&D with the two of us, because that just wouldn't be fun.
People do play one-on-one D&D, and there's a funny video on Google Video about it you might have seen, but it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it occasionally, but not as a campaign, more as a, all right, it's time to roleplay out this thing that only my character's doing while everyone else is eating Cheetos.
Oh, yeah, but...
Or, everyone's out of town except the two of us, let's move the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But... I really think Scott and I could set up little scenarios and actually play them out in Burning Wheel, just the two of us, and I think it would be fun.
Maybe we could.
Yeah. So we'll talk about this a lot more. Burning Wheel has added a new element. It's revitalized my love of role-playing games.
I think what you could actually do with Burning Wheel is you could be like, all right, let's say there's I don't know, let me think of something really quick. There's a merchant and there's a thief. And the thief stole something from the merchant, and he's hidden it on his body, and go. One to use the thief, one to use the merchant.
Yeah.
That's simple, and then you have two pieces of paper, and one has the beliefs of the merchant, which are, that guy stole something from me, I want it back, goddamn this thief. And the thief has beliefs, I stole this. I want to keep it because I'm poor. This merchant's rich and greedy. And then you just go, and there'd be a duel of wits, and it'd be a great fun time. It'd give you at least a half hour of entertainment.
I mean, I wish you all could have seen this game, especially as it wound down and the plot was revealed and everything was resolved. And
people were screaming and yelling like it was like, oh my God, woo!
Yep, and we got some really good in-character speeches at the end by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic.
Yep.
I mean, I'd love to just tell the whole story of the game, because this would be a story. You could just take what we did and write a short story, and it would be awesome.
A very awesome short story.
But we can't ruin it for you. If you ever get the chance to play a Burning Wheel demo with Luke Crane, do it.
Yeah, look for gaming convention. I think he has his convention schedule on his website.
Yes, he said he does. And, of course, we'll ask him about that when we get him on the show, because he seemed very open to an interview.
Yeah, he seems like, oh, I love podcasting, whatever, so.
Yep.
And he was amazed that we do 4 shows a week, which everyone should be.
Yeah, so we've gone for a long time, but that's good, because there's going to be no podcast on Thursday. I'm going out of town.
Yeah, so now we're going to tell you about the non-gaming part of UberCon, getting home.
Yeah, so as you might have noticed in the link, if you go to the website, that I mentioned a blizzard, and I mentioned New Jersey.
Now, I knew there was going to be some blizzardy snow, but I didn't care.
Yeah, we didn't really consider the blizzard in our planning. We just ignored it.
I considered it, but I also ignored it.
Yeah, I
was
just ignored it. I figured, whatever, worst case, we'll stay at the hotel.
I didn't think it was going to be that big or that dangerous. And you know what? It really wasn't that big or that dangerous. You know, I mean, it wasn't like I've had ice storms before, which are infinitely worse. I've had like 3 feet of snow, which is infinitely worse. This is pretty much a normal snowstorm. You know, I mean, snow piles up and it snows. And whatever. But we leave the con, we get in the car, we clean off the car, which kind of sucked, and we get in, and we start to drive really slowly onto the highway. And we got to the highway pretty easily, which was nice. Going north in the Garden State. Now, going north in the Garden State to our house, there's a trick. If we keep going north in the Garden State and don't stop, eventually it becomes I-87 North, which is exactly where we want to be, because that takes us to 84 East, which takes us to our house. Okay? There is a way to get from the Garden State to 87 North. Is there really the same road, but there's like this magic shortcut. I don't understand quite the geography of it.
Yeah, it involves 17.
It involves like 17, 287, and I-80, and something else.
I go that way often when I go to, you know, Philly or Horsham, but going to Philly or Horsham is completely different from going to Jersey, so I couldn't be of any assistance.
Yeah, I've mastered this shortcut going south. Like, going south, I just take exit 14A on 87, and then, boom, okay, I'm on the Garden State much faster than just going south on 87 forever. But going north, I have a problem with it. So I saw an exit. First of all, we're going really slow on the highway, and the worst thing about it wasn't the cars driving shittily around me, because that was to be expected.
Yeah, there was one that spun out and almost hit us. It was fantastic.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't, you know, any problem with my car, because my car was brand new and great. Well, actually, there was a problem with my car, is that it's so new and great that if you step a little bit on the gas, it accelerates a lot. So sometimes I would step on it a little bit too much from nothing, and it would go whoop, and then spin the tires a little bit. But it was never really trouble because the anti-lock brakes were great, and the steering was great, and the big tires are great. But anyway, so I see an exit for 17, and I'm like, aha, 17 is a road I know. That seems like the shortcut to me. And I was close, real close, but not quite. I got on 17 North. North is good. North is good because that's right where I want to go. But it wasn't getting there any faster, and we're still going really, really slowly. We couldn't see the lanes. The worst thing was I couldn't see the lanes.
Now, keep in mind, it's still snowing, and we've just been gaming for over 12 hours, and we're tired.
Real tired.
It's like 1.
Yeah. And we're going really slow. What should be a 90-minute trip eventually became a 2.5-hour trip. So now you know how long it took us to get home. And we did make it home. But
well, obviously.
Obviously. But not being able to see the lanes was absolutely the worst thing there was, because I wanted to drive in the lane, and I wanted to drive in the tire tracks of the guy in front of me and where there was the most traction. But it was almost impossible to do all those things, especially in unplowed, unsalted, unsanded areas. It was just, that was the hardest part of driving, was didn't matter the cars around me. I didn't care about them so much. They weren't really bothering me. It was keeping my car going where I wanted it to go straight.
Now, independent of that, New Jersey has some issues when it comes to their roads, particularly the signage.
Yeah. Okay, so we get off the Garden State. We're going north on 17. Now, to get back on a highway, usually the signs, and they have little arrows saying, you know, here's how to get back to a highway.
So we're driving, and we see a sign, Garden State, this exit.
I figured, all right, screw this 17 road. I'm getting back on the Garden State and going north. So the little green sign says, Garden State, this-a-way. So I made a right turn, and I went that way. Then there was I could either go straight or right. I didn't know, because there wasn't another sign to tell me the Garden State is straight or the Garden State is right.
Yep, so assuming, you know, it didn't say, let's keep going straight.
Yeah, I went straight, we went right, we went around in circles twice, and we didn't find any more signs to tell us how to get back to the Garden State.
Yeah, imagine this, we're going straight, we figure, we're going to hit the Garden State. Eventually, we get back, it takes us back to 17, we pass the same goddamn exit.
Mm-hmm.
It just took us in a circle.
We went in two circles, then we went into a parking lot to rest, and there were some high school kids fooling around. Then we went to a gas station to rest some more.
In fact, didn't they write the word vagina on someone's car?
I think they did, and some girl got mad. It was funny.
Yeah.
Whatever. They could do what they want. We rested at a gas station, which was a much-needed relief, peeing and such. Then we just kept going north on 17 until eventually we hit 87, thank God.
The moment,
even though
the
there is no
second gap. We passed into the borders of New York, the roads were suddenly great.
It could have had something to do with that fleet of plows that was coming from the New York Department of Transportation.
Yeah.
It was a little tough avoiding them with my car, but it worked out.
I mean, I guess we're not really making fun of Jersey. It's just the fact that we have trouble almost every time we drive in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have trouble anywhere else. We drive halfway across the country to go to conventions. No issues.
Yep.
Jersey, God damn it. Because if you're going north on a road, there'll be exits that don't exist if you're going south or vice versa. Oh, my God.
And there'll be ways to, like, get off a highway, but then no way to get back on it. It's
yep.
really because the roads are divided, right, with those Jersey dividers, and they're real long and real fast, and it's real hard to figure out how to get to anywhere from them, you know? It's like, imagine if the highway had stores in the side of it, on both sides, and it's not easy to get to the other side. There are very infrequent U-turns and very infrequent left turns, and anything that's off of those main highway-divided roads is really, really tricky and scary, and you just don't know where the hell to go, ever.
Now, independent of that, it's dark and it's snowing.
Yeah, great.
And we're tired.
And hungry.
Yeah, real hungry, because, all right, we got Domino's Pizza, like we said, right? I've determined that Domino's Pizza is not food. I was not satisfied.
Well, Domino's Pizza might not be great, and it's not.
Well, that particular Domino's Pizza did not sit well with me.
Well, I didn't eat the meat pizza once I saw it. I realized it wasn't going to be good. I ate the pepperoni.
Yeah, but you were just as bad off as I was.
I was pretty bad off. My stomach wasn't the
happiest. I was full of food, and my stomach was pissed off at me for some reason, but I was still hungry, and I knew that I wasn't getting any nutrition from this pizza, but I was so full, I couldn't eat any other food.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, Domino's Pizza might not be anything compared to any other pizza place, but Domino's Pizza is closer to pizza than Taco Bell is to Mexican food.
Yeah, but I like Taco Bell.
I don't like Taco Bell at all.
Well, you see, remember, I eat White Castle.
Yeah, that's even what's the worst.
See, get this. I like Taco Bell, even though I don't consider them tacos, but what they are, I like.
What they are is poison.
What they are isn't so bad.
It's terrible.
I'll eat Arby's.
I'll eat Arby's, but I'll eat it. I think we already ate it, so
yeah.
I can't eat it again for a whole year.
And I freaking love White Castles and Hot and Now's. Mainly because I grew up in Detroit, where we lived like right near a White Castle.
No, not eating any of that shit.
But even the thought of a McDonald's or a Burger King just makes me nauseous.
Oh, I can't eat any of those.
Except McDonald's breakfast, which are freaking awesome.
I won't eat at McDonald's anything, ever.
McDonald's, well, you make McDonald's eggs, so I don't know why you complain.
I don't make McDonald's eggs.
Scott
the
makes
milkshakes
McDonald's
at
eggs.
McDonald's taste good, actually. But
what?
I know
no, they don't.
Yeah, they do, but I know they're full of chemicals, so I always get real ice cream ones from diners and stuff, because they taste the same. As the McDonald's ones.
All right, so anyway, we've talked a long time, but that's okay. Once again, no podcast on Thursday since Katsukan.
Yep.
Unless Scott decides to do something on his own. That's all him.
Bully, bully, bully.
Yeah, we'll see if you know how to use the mixer and everything.
It's plugged in. I just start talking, and I push the record button.
Yeah, I guess you could boot Nopix on my computer and then record to an external hard drive somewhere.
Or I could just take the mixer into my room and...
Yeah, we'll see if you know how to use the compressors. Though, I ordered a compressor. Well, I'm ordering it. I'll have ordered it probably by the time you listen to this episode.
I thought we ordered a disco ball.
Yeah, a disco ball. Don't ask. It's late.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, we're either going to get a dynamic range compressor, like a valve compressor, to stick into our line, to the line between the mixer and the computer for recording, or we're going to get a disco ball and hang it in our little studio here.
Both of them should increase the audio quality of the podcast significantly. So yeah. It's really a matter of, you know, price performance ratios and such.
Yeah, the good disco ball is $10 more than the cheap compressor. But I could get the $100 compressor, but is that worth the difference in the disco ball?
I don't know. I think the 24-inch double mirror disco ball with the colored stripes, as long as we get, you know, good bright white LEDs to point at it, should be the best, even though it's a little more expensive.
Yeah, but anyway, in sum, UberCon was awesome. Burning Wheel is awesome. Hangman games are really cool. All of you who didn't come to UberCon and see us suck. Though, to the people in Australia and the UK, I kind of understand.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, and Jersey sucks.
Yeah, at least North Jersey. I like Wildwood a lot.
Well, it's not so much that the state itself sucks. It's the roads suck.
Yeah. We'll be at KatsuCon. I'll mention that again because I want
well,
to see
you'll
people.
Be at KatsuCon.
I'll be at KatsuCon.
I'll be at the New York Comic Con.
Yeah, I may or may not be at the New York Comic Con.
2 weekends from now.
Now, Scott, if you want, there's another spot in our room at KatsuCon. I burped.
I don't really want to pay for that.
It'd be cheaper than what I'm paying because it'd be one more person.
Yeah, no, because then it would make your price go down.
Yeah, it'd also make your price go down.
Well, it would make my price go up from zero to your new decreased price.
Yeah, well, you'd get free transport because I'm just driving to D.C. Thursday after work.
No, I can't go Thursday. That's too early.
What?
Nope.
Yeah, anyway, this was a long episode. I've said that a bunch of times, so we're done.
We're done. Jersey City.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.